Get ready for Sharon Hughes.
It's unfortunate and tragic that I have to teach this committee the
that's
basic principles of Americanism.
That's not the question.
Saying it like it is.
This is a worldwide problem, a worldwide enemy, and we better get our act together or we're in trouble.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice.
I had my way about it. They'd all be sent back to Russia or some other unpleasant place.
Bringing you familiar guests on important issues such as immigration, education, the Middle East, culture, religion, and the changing worldviews of Americans and the world. Now here's Sharon.
For such a time as this.
Freeing the minds of the brainwashed masses.
Today.
In order to make America great and glorious again, I am tonight announcing my candidacy for President of the United States.
This is a pretty straightforward question, a yes or a no. Do you believe that Donald Trump should ever be president again?
David, I think that's up to the American people. But I think we'll have better choices in the future.
Directly above the bench are two central figures depicting majesty of the law and power of government. Between them is a tablet of the Ten Commandments. But he further researched and found that in 1987, a building was designated a National Historic Landmark, and it came under the U.S. Department of Interior. And the new management rewrote the handbook again in 1988, and the Ten Commandments reference was left out of the edition. It wasn't replaced. But then again in 1999, the reference again appeared, and this time it was the Ten Amendments of the Bill of Rights.
What's being called cultural and historical amnesia. So what's happening is students are being robbed of their national heritage in many, many ways. In terms of this multiculturalism, we're having an example of a salad bowl rather than a melting pot metaphor.
There was Tom Brokaw standing in front of Mount Rushmore, and he was reciting the Declaration, and he says, all men are endowed with certain inalienable rights, among them are the right to life, liberty, so. I say, wait a second, what did he leave out? Go back and you read it. It says, all men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
Are Americans thankful because we're free, or are we free because we're thankful? We still have a lot to learn from the settlers who hosted that first meal.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the show today. This is Thanksgiving week, a week when we look forward to Thanksgiving Day, not only to have a delicious turkey and all the fixins, but to be grateful to God who brought us through this past year. And even though we've all gone through an awful lot, there still are things to be thankful for. And one thing that I'm thankful for, among so many other things, is the recorded history that we have of brave men and women who, against all kinds of odds, I mean, the heroes, those that we are amazed at, that we are inspired by, in what they overcame and did not lose heart. Like the pilgrims who lost half of them the first winter, and yet they established the first Thanksgiving. Absolutely brave individuals. And I don't know where you're at as regards to this past week when Donald Trump announced that he was going to run for president again in 2024. That's a pretty bold thing to do, given all that he has gone through and will most definitely go through from now until the election of 2024. The Department of Justice announced the day after he announced that they were going to appoint a special counsel to investigate him. Here's what they said.
Based on recent developments, including the former president's announcement that he is a candidate for president in the next election, and the sitting president's stated intention to be a candidate as well, I have concluded that it is in the public interest to appoint a special counsel.
Even within the Republican Party, there are those that don't want him to run. Mike Pence said that he thought there were better choices.
Straightforward question, a yes or a no. Do you believe that Donald Trump should ever be president again?
David, I think that's up to the American people. But I think we'll have better choices in the future.
Better choices than Donald Trump. Will you run for president in 2024?
Well, we're giving it consideration in our House. Prayerful consideration.
Do you believe you can beat Donald Trump?
Well, that would be for others to say, and it'd be for us to decide whether or not we'd want to test that.
So if you decide to run and he's up there, so be it.
It's interesting because that was the David Muir show. They edited out Pence saying at the end there, so be it. Well, I thought we would have a little bit of a breather between the 2022 election and the 2024, but that's not the case. In the meantime, as all of that begins to unfold and everything else that's going on in the world, our show today is going to shed light on our nation, both in the past and now. Everything that's talked about on the show today is to bring the truth to the way things really are or were by looking at whatever comes out of the horse's mouth, if you will. Everything else would be conjecture or commentary or opinion or whatever, and it's okay to have opinions. We all have them. But if we want to get to the truth, we have to look at what was really said, what real history is, and that's the purpose of today's show. Having said all of that, Dwayne and I wish all of you a happy Thanksgiving. We hope that it will be a day when you are blessed and that it will have deeper meaning, which I'm sure that it will, because struggle has a way of creating that in us.
Hard-hitting on the issues, Sharon is not afraid to challenge the politically correct madness of our day and the progressive agenda that is fundamentally transforming our nation.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge, defending your rights as a Christian, a parent, and a citizen. Here's Brad Dacus.
Folks, gender ideology is growing in every aspect of culture. Concerned about its impact on children, legislators and public policy professionals are taking several steps to prevent it from taking root in state legislation. Under the Save Adolescents from Experimentation Act, minors are restricted from undertaking chemical or surgical operations without parental consent. Pacific Justice Institute continues to advocate for parental rights. Download the free resource Sex Ed Parental Rights to discover more about your rights as a parent at pji.org.
PJI provides legal representation without charge. Get exclusive email updates by registering for The Legal Insider at pji.org.
My name is Marcia. I'm from Long Beach, California. I heard about Aloe Apex and I was interested because I had had a problem with my leaky gut, migraines, and chronic arthritis in my lower back for many, many, many years. And I had tried everything, just like everybody always says, and nothing helped. And I tried Aloe Apex thinking about my leaky gut issues only, but to my surprise, I started to notice that the nagging, aching pain that was in my lower back had really lightened up considerably. And my joints and my legs and my knees feel so much better. Thank you so much. I finally found something that works, and I am so very grateful to Apex Health.
And Apex Health has offered our listeners a special. If you go to apexhealth.live/Sharon, you can order your first bottle or bottles of Aloe Apex at a $10 saving off the regular price. Just click on order now and use the promo code Sharon Special or call 833-334-5433. Again, 833-334-5433.
Here's more with your host, Sharon Hughes.
I don't know about you, but I think about the Pilgrims and how they really are our founding fathers and mothers of the faith here in America, if you will. It was around 110 pilgrims that ventured out and came to this land. They got out of those ships and they took a cross. This is real history. Go to the original documents, not the rewritten history or what's in today's school textbooks. Those pilgrims took a cross and they set it in the sand on the beach where they landed. And they dedicated this new land to, quote, the propagation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you know what? America has indeed fulfilled that covenant that the pilgrims made with God when they landed here. Statistics show from organizations that tally these things and record them that America sends out more missionaries around the world than any other nation. As a matter of fact, in 1 year recently, 400,000 missionaries were sent out around the world from nations in the world, but America sent out the most. Of the 400,000 missionaries, America sent out 127,000 of those missionaries. And to put that into perspective, the second nation that sent out the most was Brazil with 34,000. America sent out five times more missionaries than that nation in second place. And not only that, you probably have heard that America is also the most charitable of people. We give more money to foreign aid as a government than any other nation, but Americans give more dollars in charity than any other nation. And of course, the good news is that's not the government. That is the people, the individual Americans, American citizens themselves. And I think all of that says something about this nation, says something about the American people. And even though our nation no longer has the priority of, quote, the propagation of the gospel of Jesus Christ as a government, still the American church is holding to that covenant that the pilgrims made by sending out missionaries, by giving sacrificially in times like this even to charities around the world. That's good news in the midst of all the challenges and bad news that we're facing right now. Of course, I would be remiss to not mention that this past week a missile landed in a Polish village near the border of Ukraine, and two people were killed in the blast. And while everybody's trying to find out why that happened or what it was all about, initial theories thinking that the missile was fired by Russia at Ukraine and went astray, yet later U.S. intelligence suggested that it had instead been part of a interceptor fired by Ukraine at a Russian missile. We'll find out what that really means, but I am mindful of how Joe Biden has warned of possible nuclear war. And I was mindful when this incident came up here in Poland about World War II and how the Nazis rounded up the Jews into the ghettos there for the purpose of destroying them. And they cut off their food supply. They deported them in groups into death camps. We know that history. But part of the process was giving the Jews an illusion, if you will, that they weren't in any real danger if they just obeyed instead of rebelling. Well, as we know, they did come for their guns, so they couldn't defend themselves. And believing, at least initially, the Nazis' propaganda, the Jews, as Jonathan Cahn pointed out in one of his writings, that the Jews cooperated with the Nazis until they were loaded into rail cars, and then it was too late. When the Jews there in Poland realized that the Nazis' intent was only to destroy them, and therefore they had nothing to lose, so they fought back. And it was called the Warsaw Uprising. Kahn wrote that the, quote, satanically driven Nazis revealed to us the strategy of the enemy meaning the devil, Satan, who wants to destroy your life. That's what he is. One of his names is the Destroyer. But one of his tactics is, as Kahn points out, is that he acts as if he's helping you or giving you something you need. However, the sooner we realize that the enemy's only trying to destroy us, the sooner we'll stop cooperating. Obviously, the pilgrims suffered religious persecution. They came to the new land for religious freedom, but they also came to this new land in that freedom to dedicate this land to the creator of this land, God Almighty. So to start out with, take a listen to what Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council and also of Faith in Action, his words are really worth the listen.
It's not the Norman Rockwell Thanksgiving backdrop that most Americans would have chosen. With every depressing headline, every crisis, gratitude is the last thing on most people's minds. We're hunting for bargains on turkeys and cautiously filling up grocery carts amid skyrocketing prices. And how many of us are actually stopping to look beyond the sting of the present to reflect upon our true blessings? And what kind of difference would it make if we did? Are Americans thankful because we're free, or are we free because we're thankful? To set the table for us tonight, it was 400 years ago this fall that the first recorded Thanksgiving took place on American soil. And as the celebration gets underway in Plymouth, Massachusetts, we still have a lot to learn from the settlers who hosted that first meal. Quote, "These were not like other men," the late Peter Marshall wrote. "The more adversity mounted against them, the harder they prayed, never giving in to despair, to murmuring, and to any of the petty jealousies that split and divide," end quote. And yet, when you think about all that they had to endure in those first 10 months, losing almost half of their company to death, it's hard to believe that they didn't just throw up their hands and give up. For them, gratitude was a choice. It was a decision to see God's hand at work, even when everything around them screamed they'd been deserted. Even in their most depressed hours, they never stopped trusting God's promises. And where would we be as a nation if they had? At a lot of points in our nation's history, Thanksgiving arrived in the darkest of chapters. 2 years into the Civil War, the most divided America had ever been, 51,000 men and boys lay dead on the fields of Gettysburg when a letter crossed President Lincoln's desk. It was sent by a woman in Philadelphia named Sarah Hale. For more than 17 years, she had written to presidents, governors, and dozens of other leaders, pleading with them to invoke a national day of gratitude. Almost none of them even responded. But something about a fixed day of Thanksgiving struck a chord with President Lincoln, who saw his broken and tattered nation on the brink. So on the third day of October 1863, he decided to take the tradition his country had only sporadically celebrated since George Washington and make it permanent. Quote, "In the midst of a civil war unequaled in magnitude and severity," Lincoln wrote, "it was time to thank God for his mercy, for freedom, and for the deliverance the country wouldn't witness for yet another two long years. Heal the wounds of the nation," he prayed in his proclamation, "and restore it." It wasn't unlike the difficult days of the Second World War when families gathered around tables with empty chairs, waiting for news from overseas. Some soldiers would mark those holidays by worshiping in the bombed-out ruins of St. Andrew's Parish in England, the same church where the pilgrims met to pray before leaving for America some 320 years earlier. Others ate turkey legs on the battlefield, a rare taste of home that had been shipped across the dangerous Atlantic just to remind the men what they were fighting for.
Stay with me. We've got a lot more on this all-American holiday and more. Be right back after this.
The Salvation Army is more than just a red kettle at Christmas.
It's a shelter for me and my children.
It's a home and assistance I need.
It's a week in the great outdoors.
It's a warm meal, a comforting word after you've lost everything.
When you donate to the Salvation Army, expect change.
This is Gail from California, and it seems like before I started taking Aloe Apex and the GFM, it was like walking uphill. Everything seemed to be an effort, and about 2 weeks after I started taking it, I noticed I was moving faster, had more energy, was doing stuff, and it was just like, wow. And then after about a month, it really started kicking in, and I was just so happy.
If you go to apexhealth.life/Sharon, you can get a 25% discount, or call 833-334-5433. Again, 833-334-5433.
Coming to you from the Sierra Nevada foothills of Northern California, you're listening to Sharon Hughes, Saying It Like It Is.
Since we are in the Thanksgiving season, my friends Deborah Ray and Audrey Russo join me to talk about some very important information that we need to have. Deborah and Audrey, it's so great to be able to be together on the show for our Thanksgiving special.
Thank you, Sharon. It's great to be with both of you. We've got lots to be thankful for.
That's for sure. Even in the midst of the troubling conditions currently in our nation on many fronts, it's always good to remind ourselves of how Americans endure difficult times in the past. It helps put things into perspective, not only personally to encourage us to continue to endure, but also how we have endured as a nation. And one of the things that I'm thankful for are our listeners, truth lovers, people who value truth. Unfortunately, there are those who are rewriting our history for political agendas or even personal agendas. One person that is in our history is Noah Webster, you know, the author of Merriam-Webster's Dictionary. And he describes history as
a narrative of events in the order in which they happened with their causes and effects. He says it's a narrative, a story. It's very different from an annal, which is a summary of listings of dates and events. Narratives are stories, and they should be used for teaching history because it's not just dates and occurrences, but also the motives, the mental perspectives, the actions, the attitudes of those involved in history. Both good and evil leaders, such as an Abraham Lincoln or an Adolf Hitler. So, what kinds of things did you find in your research about rewriting history? Deborah, what did you find?
Oh, there are just so many examples. And really, when we're talking about revisionist history, considering the Webster definition, we're really today talking about social science and an alternative ethic. Because what's happening is multiculturalism, political correctness, have exposed the new generations to what's being called cultural and historical amnesia. So what's happening is students are being robbed of their national heritage in many, many ways. In terms of this multiculturalism, we're having an example of a salad bowl rather than a melting pot metaphor.
You know, maybe it's old news that schools are rewriting the story of Thanksgiving, but it's a big fat lie because they're teaching that the pilgrims were giving thanks to the Indians for their survival and the great harvest, and Squanto and others were helpful, but it was by no means thanking the Indians. It wasn't a feast about that. I don't know, Audrey, what kinds of examples you came up with, but don't you think that that's at the heart also at the rewriting of history, that people take God out of school, take him out of history too? They just don't want to have that be a part of our history.
Absolutely. If you don't like it, you eliminate it. And that's absurd when it comes to history. I found a couple of examples and they were pretty amazing. Recently, a pastor, as a matter of fact, a pastor from California, was visiting historical sites in D.C. and he was stunned when the tour guide at the Supreme Court said the following. Between the images of the people depicting the law and the power of government, there was a tablet with 10 Roman numerals. The first five down the left side and the last five down the right side. The tablet represents the first 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights. He researched it and found the 1975 official U.S. Supreme Court handbook that said, directly above the bench are two central figures depicting majesty of the law and power of government. Between them is a tablet of the Ten Commandments. But he further researched and found that in 1987, the building was designated a National Historic Landmark, and it came under the U.S. Department of Interior. And the new management rewrote the handbook again in 1988, and the Ten Commandments reference was left out of the edition. It wasn't replaced. But then again in 1999, the reference again appeared, and this time it was the Ten Amendments of the Bill of Rights.
This
is what the tour guides in Washington, D.C. are saying about the Supreme Court. I was like, what? Then another one, Tom Tancredo, on Years of Chicano History in Pictures. This is a textbook in the public school in the U.S., okay? 500 Years of Chicano History in Pictures. In response to the bicentennial celebration of the 1776 American Revolution and its lies, this is what it's called. And they say its stated purpose is to celebrate our resistance. So my question is, resistance to what? The book describes defenders of the Alamo as slave owners, land speculators, and Indian killers. They call Davy Crockett a cannibal. And it said that in the 1857 war on Mexico, not the war with Mexico, but the war on Mexico was an unprovoked U.S. invasion. This is a United States textbook in a public school, okay? And some of the headings and some of the chapters also include death to the invader, U.S. conquest and betrayal, and we are now a U.S. colony in occupied America, and they stole the land.
Wow.
Can you believe this?
Yeah, I can, because we've been hearing about this for quite a while, but it nevertheless is still disconcerting every time we look at this subject. And I think it's just really important for all of us to remember that whoever controls the present controls the past, to write history or rewrite history. And whoever controls the past, the history, controls the future. Because when you control history, you set the stage for the future. Basically, they're saying the history as we know it was inaccurate. And so in rewriting history, they're
putting back the truth. Of course, my question is always, how would they know that if they weren't back there? And what are they using for documents? I mean, for years and years and years, it never came up.
Yeah. And you know what I think is amazing is all the omissions in revisionist history, especially with regard to Thanksgiving. You know, most people don't realize that midway through their voyage, the Mayflower experienced a fierce storm and its main beam was cracked. It knocked the vessel to its side. And the only thing they knew to do was pray. And God gave them the answer to shore up that main beam. These are the testimonies of Thanksgiving that make it very special.
Well, and of course, they're not even talking about that aspect of it at all. There's hardly any of that kind of acknowledgement. I mean, they may say, well, yeah, okay, they were praying to God, thanking them for the harvest. But to go into that kind of detail, you won't find that anymore. But
no, you won't. You know, they're calling it good luck or good fortune.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let me just throw this out here. This was amazing when I found this. Robert Jensen, who was writing on the website AlterNet, in an article he titled No Thanks to Thanksgiving, he said, instead, we should atone for the genocide that was incited and condoned by the very men we idolize as our heroic founding fathers. One indication of moral progress in the United States would be the replacement of Thanksgiving Day as its self-indulgence family feasting with a national day of atonement accompanied by a self-reflective collective fasting. But what's the atonement for? He said, for wiping out an indigenous people.
This is exactly what the textbooks say. The U.S. History and Course of Human Events put out by West Publishing demonizes the colonists for their attempt at Christianizing the Indians, but justified the Indians' torture as a means by which bereaved families compensated for the loss of loved ones.
They never talk about that. You know, let me go on just a little bit more with what he said. Not only is the thought of such a change in this white supremacist holiday impossible to imagine, but the very mention of the idea sends most Americans into fits, which speaks volumes about our historical hypocrisy and its relation to the contemporary politics of empire United States.
There's just another, you know, there's so much white guilt, there's so much political correctness, and there's so much bitterness connected to it. And they rewrite the history and they internalize it and then they start to spew like that.
What's the agenda behind these kinds of things? I want to find out who's behind it. What's the agenda? What are they saying? Because that also is part of history. You know, there's a terrific book by Catherine Millard. It's called The Rewriting of America's History with a foreword by Dr. D. James Kennedy. I highly recommend this book. She says that rewriting a nation's history is frequently one of the first strategies taken by a conquering nation. Why? Because a people who do not know from where they came also do not know where they're going. Thus, they become easy prey for a conquering nation. And she says, well, this phenomenon has occurred repeatedly throughout history and throughout the world. Today, it's happening in our beloved United States. And she says it's happening through the rewriting and or reinterpretation of American historical records in our national parks, monuments, memorials, landmarks, shrines, churches, and in some cases, changes are subtle and in others blatant. And she says, for instance, it's done through removal of key historical pieces or documents. It's done through changing architecture, as we've been seeing. It's also done through emphasizing or de-emphasizing historical periods. And she says there's an emphasis upon history today in our schools, primarily that begins around the Civil War and moves forward. Some begin around the 1900s. This is very disturbing. I think what we're seeing, and who would have ever thought, but we are living where around the world, the rhetoric is that America is hated, is distrusted, we're called arrogant. If that were so, let me just put it this way, why does everybody want to come to America? You know,
exactly.
If we were so bad.
That's the measure of how wonderful a country is who wants to come. We're not all trying to get our tickets to Tehran.
You know?
It's just not working that way.
You've been there too.
Yeah, and I'm not going back. But it's deconstructionism. It's deconstructing everything that has to do with Western culture, inclusive of Judeo-Christian ethic. Yes. So once you deconstruct, once you hate America first and undermine everything that she stands for, and as Audrey referenced, that guilt factor, that white guilt factor, we concede then. We just let it go. And when the walls of national sovereignty, when the sense of nationhood is broken down, that's when bioregional global government can be pulled together under a dictatorial reign.
Documents and accounts of what the founding of our nation's about, the rewriting of it is everywhere.
You know, Abe Lincoln once said that the philosophy in the classroom of one generation will be the philosophy of the government in the next. And, you know, we're seeing already the fruit of this educational anemia. And one of the reasons our children do not measure up academically to children in other countries, according to Hoover Institution scholar and columnist Thomas Sowell, is that so much time is spent in American classrooms twisting our history for ideological reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see in this book there's a new story that's being told that doesn't in the least resemble the old story.
It's very interesting you said that it's really like you have gymnastics in the history class now, because this is exactly what they're doing with history, twisting it around, flipping it around.
Yeah. Well, ladies, I think we touched on things that touch the heart of the core of America, and that those people that don't like our history and are trying to rewrite it, they're the fringe. However, we have to be alert. You know, sometimes one person or just a couple can make major changes, such as Madeline Murray O'Hara, who got prayer taken out of the schools. So while we are not overrun by people with this mentality, we need to watch that there are those that don't like America. They don't like our history. They don't like the God of our history. And they want to do whatever they can to change those things. So thank you, both of you, and your contributions today. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
We have to take a break. And when we come back, historian William Federer on some real history about Thanksgiving. Fascinating. Keep it here.
Hi, Jane. How's your first year of teaching going?
Well, I'm struggling with something. Financially supporting the teachers' union is required. But to support some of the things the National Education Association publicly advocates would violate my faith. I believe that abortion is wrong. And I can't let my union dues support an organization that promotes it. But those dues are mandatory. It's not about the money.
Jane, I'm glad you shared this with me. As a beginning teacher, I faced the same dilemma. So I called the National Right to Work Foundation. They told me that under federal law, NEA officials cannot force me to support them. I was able to keep my conscience clear and honor my faith by redirecting that money to a charity instead.
I'd really like to find out more about my rights.
The National Right to Work Foundation has provided free legal aid to hundreds of religious objectors. You can give them a call at 1-800-336-3600 or access their website at nrtw.org. Request a copy of their free brochure when you call.
This is Elias from San Antonio, Texas. Testimonial on the Nature's Miracle ointment. I've been using that on small burns and cuts, and within hours you can see the healing begin. And on my wife, she's bedridden. I've used it on rashes on her face and on her legs, and the same thing. I'll tell the nurses kind of as a joke. I'll say, this is going to start to heal within a few hours, and within 2 or 3 hours, they can already see the difference. So it's a great product. I recommend it.
For Changing Worldviews listeners, you can get a 25% discount. Go to Apex Health, apexhealth.life/Sharon. You can order at the special price of $29.95 or call 833-334-5433. Again, 833-334-5433.
You're listening to The Sharon Hughes Show. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Just follow the links at the bottom of the page at changingworldviews.com.
You know, for most of us, the American tradition of Thanksgiving means a day or hopefully even a weekend off, a gathering with family and friends over a much anticipated delicious turkey dinner, and a time to reflect and express gratitude to God for our many blessings. You know, that's really not too different from how the pilgrims celebrated, despite what the history revisionists say. As a matter of fact, how aware are you that Thanksgiving has fallen into politically correct disrepute? as many other elements of our society have. Yeah, not only Christmas has fallen into the hands of the politically correct, but Thanksgiving. I mean, just visit a Barnes & Noble or other major bookstore and you'll find lots of books on Thanksgiving, especially for children, but many of them give a distorted view of this all-American holiday. Why, after reading them, if you didn't know better, you'd believe that the pilgrims came to America for economic purposes and that they were secularists because all mention of God has been removed from many of the accounts, and also that Thanksgiving was designed by the pilgrims to thank the Indians. Well, how can we know what the true history of this or anything is? Original documents. Go back to the original documents, written by those that lived in and shaped whatever event we're talking about. So today, we're going to talk turkey with author and modern-day historian and friend William Federer about some of what the revisionists have written and is being promoted, not just in bookstores, but in classrooms, about the first Thanksgiving that differs from the original accounts. And why does this matter? Because it's not about holding on to traditions or fondly held beliefs. It's about holding on to the truth. You know, the majority of Americans consider Thanksgiving one of their favorite holidays, but there are those who are rewriting its history, as I've already said, but also there are those who want the United States to stop celebrating Thanksgiving Day, quote, and its self-indulgent family feasting altogether. So how important are worldviews when it comes to history? Extremely important. I think that goes without saying. And whether you enjoyed history when you were in school or not, I think we all recognize now that we have to understand history if we want to understand what's going on in our world today, whether it's about American traditions or about the wars that we're engaged in or the definition of family. Author and modern day historian William Federer to set the record straight about the true origin of one of America's favorite holidays. Well, welcome, Bill. It's great to have you with us again.
Sharon, it's great to be with you.
There's a war on Thanksgiving.
We've seen our history revised and changed, sort of like that 1984 novel where they had the mm-hmm. Truth Committee, but the Truth Committee kept changing history to meet whatever it is that the agenda was. What we're seeing is a cleansing of our heritage of anything that acknowledges God, deity, providence, religion, morality. And in its place, we're seeing a new religion of secular humanism. I debated the head of the Council for Secular Humanism one time, and he said, well, I'm not pushing a religion. And I said, well, in fact, you are, because if you get a dictionary and you look up the word religion, about the fourth definition down, it says religion, a system of belief. And then you look up the word belief, and it says thoughts or opinions upon which one bases their actions. So as long as you're doing actions, you have thoughts or opinions that precede those actions, and that collection is your belief system, is your religion. And so when the ACLU and groups like that say they just want the government to be religion neutral, in actual fact, what they're really saying is we want your belief system out, and we want our belief system in, a new religion, a new belief system, which is different than the founding fathers. And so as a consequence, they're rewriting our history.
Yes, and the Supreme Court acknowledged the fact that secular humanism was a religion anyway, so.
Yeah, it did in several cases, and I cite that in my book in 1982 in a case, and then also later in a district court case, Crockett versus Sorensen. It says that the First Amendment was never intended to forbid religion or God or the Bible. It says when such a prohibition exists, a new religion, such as secular humanism, is effectively established. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing this happen. And, you know, one of the things was the Thanksgiving holiday, how they wanted to change it from thanking God to thanking the Indians. And I pulled off the internet from a U.S. embassy website, and it said this: Thanksgiving was a public acknowledgement of the Indians' role in the first Thanksgiving 350 years ago. It says, until recently, most school children believed that the pilgrims cooked their entire Thanksgiving feast and offered it to the Indians. In fact, the feast was planned to thank the Indians for teaching them how to cook those foods. Without the Indians, the first settlers would not have survived. It's true, without the Indians, the first settlers would not have survived. That Thanksgiving, you go back and you read the documents, which I've put in my book, America's God and Country. William Bradford says, that to all ye pilgrims, inasmuch as the great Father has given us an abundant harvest of corn, wheat, peas, squash, and Indian corn, and so forth, that I request that all pilgrims establish and assemble at ye meeting place to give glory to God for this abundant harvest. So the Thanksgiving was to God, and now it's being changed.
Basically, if you go to the encyclopedia or the dictionary, revisionist history is a history that has been revised to support a particular political or social agenda. That is what it is. It's not the same as if a historian now finds a new piece of evidence that brings a different light to something. Revisionists, they're doing it for a specific purpose with a specific bent for a particular political or social agenda. I mean, they're writing it through the lens of a perspective rather than just factual documented evidence. So as someone who obviously appreciates accurate accounts of history, you know, what do you make of the increasing efforts of revisionists to rewrite American history?
You know, Karl Marx basically said that whoever wins gets to write the history. What happened is, without God, there's no eternal life, there's no absolute truth. So then history has no purpose outside of itself, so you may as well promote an agenda with it.
Very interesting.
And one of the founders said that we draw our identity of who we are from the past. In other words, whoever controls the present controls the past. Whoever controls the past controls the future. You know, we have found in the prison system that 70% of the convicts are from broken homes. They don't have an identity. They don't have a background. And so as a consequence, they're subject to peer pressure, to the gangs and so forth. But you take somebody that's from a home with an intact, you know, family structure, they have an identity of who they are, they're not as subject to being manipulated through peer pressure. When we don't know our roots, we're subject to the peer pressure of the public opinion, the media, the rural educational establishment. If we know our history and the price that was paid for our freedoms, then we're not easily as apt to let go of those freedoms.
Yes, and that's what we're talking about today, and we're going to talk more about that. I mean, let's just face it, folks. Revisionists were the ones that have been trying to say that the Holocaust never happened. I mean, it gets that extreme. But when we come back, we're going to talk more about some of those revisionist claims and what the pilgrims themselves said and what Bill thinks about why they want to change the Thanksgiving story. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Want trustworthy and concise coverage? Sharon delivers, and check out her website at changingworldviews.com.
Well, we're having a fall clearance here at Changing Worldviews, and again, we've got our grab bag offer. This time, instead of just two top book picks, you get three for only $25, such as The ABCs of Culturalism, or Help Mom, Hollywood's in My Hamper, or David Horowitz's Radical Son, his own story of being son of communists and how he transformed from the left to the right. Grab bag, three books for $25. You can order online at changingworldviews.com. Just click on the store tab, or you can send a check to Changing Worldviews, P.O. Box 995, Cedar Ridge, California, 95924. This is just a great way to support Changing Worldviews and help us pay for airtime and get something in return.
I'm talking with William Federer about Thanksgiving. Now, I am all for, and I know you are, for bringing out the facts that have been hidden or ignored. And, you know, that's what our show is all about. But some of those who are trying to rewrite our history have not only added interpretation to factual occurrences, but they put such a spin on some of the events that they hardly resemble the actual accounts. Thanksgiving is one example, and it appears, at least in some instances, to be packaged as, you know, good Indians, bad pilgrims. I read last night where they say the pilgrims scalped the Indians. Now, you know, what do the records show here?
Well, the pilgrims never did. There was never any violence between the pilgrims and the Indians, partly because of Squanto. One of the most miraculous stories of God's providence, the eastern seaboard of America was occupied with Indian tribes. And the pilgrims realized that, you know, they had been persecuted in England, so they fled to Holland, and then they were thinking of going to British Guyana in South America, the northern coast of South America, but they thought it was too close to the Spanish Main. The Spaniards were known to butcher settlements of other countries. And so they decided to go to Jamestown, but were blown off course and landed there at Plymouth Rock. Well, this is interesting because just 3 years before the pilgrims landed, a French ship ran aground at Plymouth Rock, Cape Cod, and William Bradford writes that the sailors got ashore with their belongings, but the Indians never left watching them and dogging them till they got the advantage of them and killed them all but three or four, whom they sent from one sachem to another, making sport with them, treating them worse than slaves. The Cape Cod area was a dangerous, violent tribe. Well, it was the Pahuteks tribe, and a plague had swept through that area, and it wiped out that entire tribe. But before that happened, the Spanish boat and the French and the English and the Dutch would come by the coast and lure Indians on board and then take them to Spain and sell them as slaves. He had done that to some Indians, and one of them was Tishquantum. He had been captured, taken to Spain. He was bought by some monks. He got his freedom, found his way back to England, where he lived for 9 years. After 9 years, he found another fishing boat to drop him back off on the shores of America, and he gets off at Cape Cod, only to find that the tribe was wiped out by a plague. So terrible was the plague that the other tribes didn't take over that land, thinking some great spirit had driven them out. Squanto was living with the next tribe over. Well, lo and behold, the Pilgrims land at, they were blown off course from Jamestown, where they were having all kinds of Indian problems, and they landed at Cape Cod, the one spot on the eastern seaboard where it was unoccupied. So the Pilgrims got ashore, and the first winter was terrible. Half of them died. There was 102 of them, and half of them died the first winter. They would not have made it past that, but the next spring, somebody tells Squanto what's going on, that there's some Englishmen trying to start a colony on his whole stopping ground. You can imagine the dismay on the Pilgrims' faces to see this wild Indian walk out of the woods speaking to them in perfect English, because Squanto had lived for 9 years in England, and then Squanto knew the Indian languages and was their interpreter and put them on good terms with the Indians, so there was never any Indian problems with the Pilgrims. Still also taught them how to catch beaver, which they used to pay back their debt. You know, we never ask ourselves, who paid for the trip of the Mayflower? Well, the Pilgrims went in debt. It took them 40 years worth of beaver skins to pay off the debt for that boat ride.
Very interesting. You know, and for those revisionists that say that the Pilgrims came here for economic reasons, they never did recuperate all the losses that they experienced, and no Americans have been more impoverished than these, who nevertheless set aside a day of Thanksgiving. Now, this depicts the Pilgrims as I think of them, as I understand them, have read about them, encountering tremendous hardships, and yet they still acknowledged God and were grateful for their blessings, and that seems to be what the revisionists want to remove, is that right?
Well, it is. Matter of fact, I saw a school textbook where they had the Mayflower Compact, which was signed by the Pilgrims in 1620, and it said, having undertaken ... a voyage to plant the first colony on the northern parts of Virginia. And you think, gee, what did they leave out with the ... The complete text, which is in my book, America's God and Country, it says, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith, a voyage to plant the first colony on the northern parts of Virginia. They just censored out references to faith out of this public school textbook. That's the type of revision that we're seeing happening. And then you see the Disney movie, Squanto. At the end of it, it almost looks like the Indians have converted the Pilgrims to their nature religion. But you look at the history books, and Squanto taught the Pilgrims how to fish and plant and grow corn and traded with the Indians. And Squanto's last words says that they went on a trip and a cold freezing rain came and they had to put ashore at an island. And William Bradford writes, here Squanto fell ill of Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose, which the Indians take for a sign of death. It says he begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven. I mean, here Squanto's last words was to pray, that he begged Governor Bradford to pray for him that he would go to the Englishman's God in heaven. In other words, Squanto was attaching himself to the nature religions. He had witnessed the Pilgrims. He had witnessed their faith, and he wanted to go to their Christian God. And I believe he did, with that desire in his heart. But you see that Hollywood and so forth has tried to take the nature religions, the diversity, to this extreme extent of downplaying the role of Christian faith. We see that all throughout history. Another I saw with the Declaration of Independence. There was a Tom Brokaw standing in front of Mount Rushmore, and he was reciting the Declaration, and he says, all men are endowed with certain inalienable rights. Among them are the right to life, liberty. So, hey, wait a second. What did he leave out? Go back and you read it. It says, all men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, the right to life, liberty. Left out that creator part. They actually used my book in Kentucky to help pass a law to prohibit content-based censorship of historical documents. These public schools were putting up historical documents, but they were taking out the references to God. For example, every one of the 50 state constitutions acknowledge God. All 43 presidents mentioned God in their inaugural addresses. And so these schools were like editing out those references, but they passed this law in Kentucky saying you can't have content-based censorship of historical documents. Karl Marx once said the first thing necessary to control a people is to separate them from their heritage.
Yes, we've got the ACLU to blame for a lot of this. I'm sure everybody knows they want to sue the Pentagon because of its affiliation, so to speak, of allowing the Boy Scouts to use public property. And, you know, the ACLU has got all kinds of cases all over the nation where people want to take out the city emblems and so forth because they might have the word Christos in it or a cross or something like that. It's ridiculous. And now we're entering in what is supposed to be 'tis the season to be jolly, but now it's really become the season to get Christ out of Christmas. I mean, no manger scenes. It's just an amazing thing.
It really is, and I'm amazed because the ACLU is getting away with it. Our public is so devoid of knowledge of our godly heritage. I mean, I put together a dozen books. I mean, I did one on there really is a Santa Claus. It's the history of St. Nicholas and Christmas holiday traditions, and it goes back to the original St. Nicholas, who was the bishop of Myra over in Turkey in Asia Minor. He was a Christian. He was imprisoned by Diocletian, the Roman emperor, to persecute Christians. But I went back and pulled this out. You know, every president from Abraham Lincoln until now has issued an annual National Day of Thanksgiving to Almighty God. And I've read through them all, and I compiled them all into a CD-ROM called American Quotations. It's a word-searchable database of quotes. But you have every one of the presidents acknowledging God with Thanksgiving since Abraham Lincoln until now. Now, prior to Lincoln, presidents did it sporadically whenever they, you know, felt that there needed to be a day of Thanksgiving. After the Constitution was written and Washington was sworn into office, he declared the first National Day of Thanksgiving to Almighty God. And then he did another one a few years later. And then, you know, different presidents did. But you even had days of prayer being declared. Harry S. Truman made a National Day of Prayer an annual event. So every president from Truman until now has had a National Day of Prayer. Ronald Reagan made it the first Thursday in May. And then you had days, believe it or not, of fasting. It was James Madison declared a day of fasting during the War of 1812. Abraham Lincoln declared a day of fasting during the Civil War. And even up to Woodrow Wilson declared a day of fasting and prayer to Almighty God during World War I. In the public papers of the presidents, and I put all those in the book, Treasury of Presidential Quotations.
Okay. John's moving his hand, telling me we are out of time. I can't believe it. It goes so fast because we have so much to talk about. But for sure, Bill, I want to thank you. I want to wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving. And also, please tell our audience your website address, where they can get your books, and also how they can learn more about your new organization, American Priorities.
Oh, thanks, Sharon. AmericanMinute.com. AmericanMinute.com. They can also sign up for a free email called an American Minute.
Okay.
And then also 888-USA-WORD. 888-USA-WORD. And they can order my books there as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much again, Bill. It was just great.
Thank you, Sharon.
Well, I hope that you found that as interesting as I did. I love history, and I think Bill Federer does a wonderful job of making history come to life.
And so to close out with one of my favorite songs, as I like to do, this one from one of my favorite musicians and composers, Jack Jezero. Enjoy. Thank you.
from California. This is Sharon Hughes saying it like it is.
You've been listening to Changing World Views with Sharon Hughes. You can follow Sharon at facebook.com/Sharon and twitter.com/Sharon. Please take advantage of our online shows covering topics and guests we can't possibly cover on our weekly show. That's why we offer more at our website, changingworldviews.com. Join Sharon next time, and until then, stay alert, stay informed, because we live in a changing world.